Hello, I'm Floyd Maxwell, justthinkit.com, doing a Floydcast, number 22 for July 14, 2014. This is the final day of the FIFA World Cup 2014. Later on today, Argentina plays Germany. Before I get to that, I've got quite a bit of soccer highlights, but Wimbledon tennis finished up last weekend. I had predicted that Djokovic was going to win. I thought he was going to win in four sets. Well, he took five. He beat Federer in five. The interesting thing was the analysts were predicting that Federer was going to win. And Federer has been really dominant on grass. I think he's won about half of his major tournaments on grass. There's four majors, but only one of them's on grass, so Wimbledon has been his thing. The thing is that, sadly, Federer is getting old. He's getting to the point where he can't win against the number one players. Doesn't matter the surface. I never for a second thought he was going to win. I was surprised he was even that close. Federer did really awesome in the fourth set. He was down two sets to one, and he fought back, broke Djokovic's serve, and then won, I think it was in the tiebreak. And he won the fourth set. That actually amazed me. I guess it's closer than I thought it was on grass still. Federer is just this very relaxed, complete player. I've always liked the way he plays. I admire the way he plays. His dad worked hard with him to get him to not have a temper on the court. I can relate to that. My dad did the same thing with me. It's a fine art to master one's temper. It's a valuable art. So that's the Wimbledon update. In the soccer last Tuesday, we had a couple of games during the week. This last week, they were the semifinal games. Brazil was playing Germany. If you follow sports at all, you know that Brazil was crushed by Germany in one of the worst scores ever in the history of the World Cup. Brazil got one goal, Germany got seven. So the margin of victory was six goals, and at one point it was 7-0. It was funny, I was working that day, and circumstances allowed me to turn on the TV at work. When I turned it on, it was 7-0. It was like the 70th minute, and Germany had just scored their seventh goal. And it's one of those things where you want to walk up to the screen and sort of take a little bit of paper towel and clean the screen, because clearly there's a mistake on the screen. It's like there's something that permanently altered the display on the screen to show a seven. And the announcers, everyone was just shell-shocked. And it was interesting, the last 20, 25 minutes of the game were absolutely nothing, of course, because the game was long since over. And basically the game ended at around the 20 or 25 minute mark. And let me tell you, if you got a 90-minute game and you have no chance of winning at the 25-minute mark, that is a very long game. For Brazil, a team that plays with their heart, plays on their emotions, rides on their emotions, to have to go 65 minutes of play crushed already, that's brutal. Brazil didn't just get knocked out of the tournament, they got crushed like a bug, and no one saw that coming. So, let's look at the coach for Brazil. Luis Felipe Scolari. Luis is a 325, and he goes by all three names all the time. Felipe is 178. Scolari, S-C-O-L-A-R-I, 775. Excellent, looking for a place to happen. And when you add all his names up together, he has a 9 destiny. And that's the losing destiny. In his total, it's a 279. And, the 279 is a nice quality, but it's not a stable quality, and it is an emotional quality. I didn't see this coming. I didn't predict that Brazil was going to get crushed like this. It was my hope that Brazil was going to lose in the final to Argentina. I thought Argentina had just enough to beat them. Germany just sort of came out of left field for me, and I think sort of the issues I have is that, Germany doing as well as they did sort of reflects the disorder in soccer. Because Germany, it wasn't exciting. They're not an exciting team. They don't have great players. Brazil has great players, and so there's something kind of wrong when a boring team beats a great team, a great player team, in my books. Now, I've heard some people say that Germany is the strongest team of the match, and they predicted them. Well, that may be the case. I didn't see it coming. I haven't watched all of Germany's games. I'm trying to think if I've even watched one of them. That might not help my analysis. Then what about the referee of the game? Because the referee can have an amazing influence on a game. I've played sporting games, and I've seen the effect of the referee. And the most common way that the referee can badly affect a game is when they don't call stuff. That's a recipe for an unfair game, for a one-sided game, for a game where one team will forget about playing and they will just be focusing on the referee. It's easy for it to happen. It seems in soccer the officiating is very unlikely in a game that you'll get perfect refereeing from one end to the other. The funny thing is in other sports, you know, you'll get the opposite. You'll kind of get, it's very likely that you will get perfect refereeing except for maybe one controversial play. In soccer, it's it can be a controversy a minute depending on the game. So the referee of the Brazil-Germany game was the referee who was refereeing when Suarez bit the other player. And this referee never did see Suarez do it, never penalized him, never looked at the other player who had obvious bite marks on his shoulder, never gave Suarez any penalty at all during the game. Suarez should have been thrown out with a red card. You know, simple as that. Well, what happened in the Brazil-Germany game was this referee let a lot of rough, very rough play by Germany, he let it go. Well, when you do that, the message that it sends is very clear. It tells, in this case, Germany that, hey, we can get away with this. This is not being called today. You know, the other team is like, we're trying to play nice here, and these guys are doing all this stuff to us, and nothing's happening. It can put you off your game, just that alone. I think that was a factor. But in addition, Brazil, early on, they lacked their heart. Neymar had gotten injured, their striker, the heart of the team, supposedly, and their captain got two yellows, makes a red card, and so he had to sit out this game, the semifinal game. So, they were missing key players, sure. But that in itself shouldn't mean anything. I think one thing people don't, including myself, don't take into account or keep in mind is that these national teams at the World Cup, they're not together all the time. The players have gone off to literally other countries. Each of them, you know, started to their own country. Ronaldo, who's on the Spanish team, well, he plays somewhere in Spain, one of the teams in Spain, but he plays on like a club team, a city team. And so there's not necessarily a lot of cohesion in these national teams as it is. So if you take away a couple of key players on a national team and there's not a lot of cohesion anyway, I guess it is possible to see some loss. Still, honestly, I thought Brazil was going to win this game. Brazil has and had so many great players, each of which figured prominently in games. I just didn't expect it all to fall apart. That one snuck past me. What happened was I watched, you know, from 70th minute onward at work, and then when I got home, I had recorded the game, and then I watched it from the beginning, and I ended up only having to watch like the first 30 or 40 minutes because that's when all the goals happened. And it was interesting that Brazil was sort of madly rushing forward. And one of the key things in soccer is to not madly rush forward. If you do that, you will lose. Examples of teams doing this are just popping into my head as I'm talking about this. The inferior teams do this. They madly rush forward. My father pointing this out to me decades ago that the great teams, they pass the ball backward. They're playing a control game, a patient game. You pass the ball forward in a clever way. You don't just frantically rush forward. When you do that, there's no subtlety in your game. The other team can meet you head on, and you've committed everything, so they can easily counterattack. Well, anyway, I thought I'd mix in as part of this, so that I'd given you a couple of, you know, accidents looking for a place to happen. Let's come up with a good combination of the game. Kroos for Germany, K-R-O-O-S. He scored two of the goals, the third and fourth goals, you know, for sure the backbreakers. Even at 2-0, it's already a desperate game, but he scored number three and number four. Well, Kroos is 3-3-6. So it's a balanced name. And isn't it interesting that he didn't score like the first goal or the game-winning goal? Because technically the first goal was the game-winning goal. He just scored a couple in the middle. But those couple in the middle iced the game. They made it so that the game was out of reach. Another guy that scored two, and he scored them later, and he's a guy I particularly noticed and liked when I watched Germany playing earlier, was André Schürrle. This is German name, so it's a little unusual spelling in the last name, S-C-H-U-R-L-E. Well, André, first of all, 696, balanced first name. Schürrle, 865. The 865 is a very, I call it a confident and competent name. The 8 has the confidence, and the 5 does too, and then the competent. Part of being competent is to know what you know and to know what you don't know. And to me, this guy, that's him. So two very good names. And he scored even later in the game. You could say even less important goals, definitely. But still, he scored two of them. You just don't normally score two goals in a World Cup. What he did is probably overshadowed by, there was like three or four other significant things. Another thing that happened was, I think, Kruse, K-R-U-S-E, a different Kruse. Maybe it was Klaus. There was a German who scored his 15th or 16th goal, and it was like the most in World Cup history, and he passed Ronaldo or Ronaldinho or something like that. Sorry, that's not interesting. You know, total number of goals is not all that interesting. If you're on a great team and you keep playing every 4 years, you're going to accumulate some goals. Somebody has to score them. But it's the team and the attitude that are really more important at this level, I think. In soccer, the way it's structured, the striker, the lead guy, he's the guy that scores the goals. Like Neymar was the striker, the lead guy, and he's the guy that scored the goals. But as it turned out, when Brazil fell apart as a team, that's what mattered much more. One funny thing, at the 5-0 mark, when the game was 5-0, the announcer said, if this was boxing, the referee would be stopping it to save Brazil from further punishment. Well, yeah, and that's the really hard thing, to have to keep playing. And also, like in football, when you get really behind in football, you have to watch out. If you quit playing in football, you can get injured. It's funny how injuries come when you quit. That's kind of an interesting thing in itself. We may be thinking that things are going badly for us in our lives, but if we quit, then they really go bad. Anyway, that's a little bit of commentary on the Brazil-Germany game, and a couple of key names in there having 775s, which is kind of interesting once again. You know, just a reminder about those 775s, two of the combinations. One of them's a 775, one of them's a 527. They're both accident, looking for a place to happen combinations. That's 2 out of 81, 1 out of 40. Each name has three positions, so that's 3 out of 40, 1 out of 14. So that means that it should be every 14 people. One in every 14 people has one of these combinations. And yeah, like in that Brazil-Germany game, it was that 1 in 14. 2 in 28, right? Well, there's 20-odd players, and there's the referee. That's close to that 28 mark. And there was two 775s I talked about, the referee and the coach. But the key there is that, first of all, I didn't analyze everyone's name. And there are other 775s in soccer, which is kind of interesting in itself, number one. And number two, these are key people. The referee. Maybe if you had to say the most important person in the game is the referee, I would argue that they are. Number one, in that you want them to not affect the game. And then number two, the coach for Brazil, his 775 had to come out at some point. And it came out sort of all at the end. It's like the whole ball of yarn just unraveled. House of cards, right? He built his team on the wrong stuff. He built his team on an accident. So the team kind of had a collective accident. I don't think anyone would argue it after the fact. But the name predicts it. Anyway. Okay, so then on Thursday, a couple of days later, last Thursday, July 10, Argentina played the Netherlands. I predicted Argentina for this World Cup, and I was hoping they would win. Netherlands team, I'd noticed they were kind of physical in an earlier game, and they were physical once again, and they got away with it 90% of the time in the first half. Now, what I mean is, 90% of the time, they do something that really, depending on the ref, depending on where it's happening, that could be a foul, that could be a penalty, but nothing happened. So the message was sent. When you watch Argentina, how clean they were playing, and then you watch Messi. Messi is far and away the cleanest player I've ever seen play. He'll do the littlest thing, put his hands up like, sorry, you know, my bad kind of thing. But he knows that he can do amazing things, and he doesn't need to cheat. You know, the good players, they don't need to cheat. It's one of the reasons why I didn't care for the guy on the Netherlands called Robin, R-O-B-B-E-N. The 292 combination, and he's their striker. A guy that was called into question for some of his dives, obvious dives. And he even admitted to some of them and tried to imply that the other ones weren't dives. You know, I'll tell you when they're a dive kind of thing. Well, that's the stark contrast between basically a dishonest player and Messi, who's a brilliant player. Anyway, in this game, Argentina and Netherlands, by the 50-minute mark, more than halfway through the game, there had been one shot on goal by Argentina. And ultimately, the game went to penalty kicks. So the game, for 90 minutes, it was a draw. Actually, it's 90 minutes of regular play, then 30 minutes of overtime. non-sudden death overtime, and then penalty kicks, and then Argentina wins. Anticlimactically. No one wanted the game to end on penalty kicks, but it did. So after this game, I was very unsatisfied with what I had watched. My team had won, but it was very anticlimactic. So I went over to YouTube. It's top 50 Lionel Messi goals. And I watched this whole thing. It's like 10 or 15 minutes long. It tells you the game. And wow. I have honestly never seen such great play in my life. In my notes here, I wrote down, be sure to watch this sitting down because you might pass out. So then I, you know, naturally I wanted to fall off a little bit. Someone else had made some videos on Messi. One series was called Lionel Messi, the King of Dribbling. And then they made even a second one, the King of Dribbling 2. And this one was 21 minutes long, even longer. Well, I gotta tell you, the dribbling one, that's the key. That's the Messi key. You know, most players, they frantically run. Strikers, that's how they score. They get the pass coming towards them, and they run faster than the other guy. Now, why does the game come down to that? Because of the dreaded offside rule in soccer. The attacking team has to stay behind the defenders when the ball is passed. Well, that means the attacking team has to have a handicap, according to the rules. It's not fair. It's not... You don't get rewarded for anticipating. Because if you anticipated, you would be way out there waiting for the pass. The other team wouldn't be ready for it. And you could have a huge advantage, right? Well, that's what happens in other sports, right? You'll see it sometimes in football. Guy's covering another guy on defense, and it's going to be a pass play. And the offensive player turns to the left and then turns to the right. The defensive player goes, whoa, and loses his balance because of the quality of the deke, the move. And the next thing you know, the guy's in the clear. There's no one around him. The quarterback just lobs the ball to him, and it's a touchdown. All fair and square. Well, this really happens in soccer because of the offside rule. So you need a sprinter for a striker. You need someone who can run super fast because it's just a foot race all the time. Well, this isn't soccer. A foot race is not soccer. But that's what you see all the time. Except with Lionel Messi, the king of dribbling. This guy, man. I described it to someone saying it's like the ball is the yo-yo and the string is around his foot and that yo-yo just keeps coming back to him. It's glued to his foot. He's really and truly dazzling. And what I enjoyed when I watched the top 50 Lionel Messi goals and the other one is to hear the announcers. These are English-speaking announcers. You know, Messi plays for a Spanish team and is Argentinian, so he's, you know, Latino in the background, let's say. So these people they're not biased, but to hear them cheering and talking about this player, it's something to behold. I gotta say, it's some of the most enthusiastic praise of a player I've ever heard, and it's well worth watching. So I watched about an hour of these YouTubes of Messi, and there is no one else like this guy. And in case you don't believe it, there was a series of articles, I don't see the link here, but someone compared Messi to... Hang on, let me check if I talked about it last week. You know, I didn't talk about it last week, but there was someone did. I think it was on 538.com is the name of the site, and someone compared in a super systematic statistical way. They compared Lionel Messi to Ronaldo, one of the other great players, and every other player in the league. And they compared them in like a dozen or two dozen different ways. The guy ended up calling the article, Lionel Messi is impossible. He's impossibly good. He stands out from everyone else to an impossible degree. And then he did a follow-up article. The title of the second article was, Messi is probably better than Maradona, but probably not as good as Pelé. Imagine how hard it is. They didn't have very many games to compare them on. It's kind of like, you know, there are certain players, like in baseball is a good example. There are players from, you know, 80 years ago who are great players. And then they try and compare modern players to those players. Well, the difference is that 80 years ago, there might have been some great players, but then there were a whole bunch of players that were smoking, drinking. You know, this was just a job. They didn't have the training. They didn't have the equipment. They didn't have the Gatorades and other stimulants, legal and illegal. It was a completely different game. And on average, there was more variation from one player to another. Well, guaranteed in soccer 50 years ago when Pelé played, guaranteed there was more variation from one player to another. There were a lot of horrible players then. I know. My dad and I know because we used to watch those horrible players, especially for England. Well, things have tightened up. And like I've said earlier, the play this year at the World Cup is the best play I've seen in soccer. So anyway, I heartily recommend checking out Lionel Messi Top 50 Goals. And if you like him as much as I do, look for the King of Dribbling. This is what makes Messi stand out, and very much better than any other player who has ever played this game. Just so fantastically brilliant. And I'm really glad I watched those, because I know that in today's game, it's probably going to be kind of discouraging, kind of depressing. So I might as well predict today's game, the final, Argentina versus Germany. I think it's going to be refereeing dominated. How the referee handles the game is going to determine the game. For example, if the referee is protecting Messi, protecting that style of play, which is to say protecting actual soccer play, protecting it with whistles and fouls and yellow cards, if he does that, Argentina has a chance. If it's like with the Netherlands and what they allowed with the Netherlands, Germany will be sufficiently physical with Messi to nullify him. Once Germany nullifies Messi, Germany will probably win. Because on average, the average German player is probably better than the average Argentinian player. So, sadly, I'm going to predict Germany based on referee. That's my prediction for today. Alright, so I guess there's one other game I didn't cover, and that was yesterday, Saturday the 12th, Brazil playing Netherlands in the runner-up game. This is something they also do at the Olympics when they have round robin and knockout rounds, and then two teams play for the gold and silver, and two teams play for the bronze. Well, I didn't know how this game was going to go, and I thought, Brazil's got a reasonable chance to win because they were humiliated and they want to come back. Brazil commits a foul early on, and the referee was dominant in a bad way. He called the wrong consequence of the foul, which was he awarded a penalty kick to Netherlands when where the foul occurred dictated that it should have been just a free kick. It would have been a free kick close to the goal, but not the same as a penalty kick. So that was mistake number one. And then mistake number two is, if you're awarding the penalty kick at that point, then by definition, you have to give the player a red card. He stopped a scoring chance in the box, as they call it, and you have to kick that player out of the game. Well, they give the Brazilian player only a yellow card. The announcers were absolutely outraged by this. So right off the bat, at the two-minute mark, the referee was dominating this game. And later on, the announcer, who still hadn't forgot or forgiven the referee, said, "This is a game that's of lesser consequence, right? It's for the bronze or for the third place. Believe me, Brazil didn't want to be playing for third place." So the announcer cared more than the players, perhaps. Anyway, the announcer later on said, "The referee is playing in a parallel universe today." But one thing you can say is this is another example of bias in favor of Brazil, and there's been a fair bit of it at this World Cup. Well, cheaters never prospered. Brazil didn't benefit from all that bias. They lost badly. So that was yesterday's game. Wasn't watchable. After 10 or 15 minutes, there was two goals for Netherlands, and I actually had a nap in the middle of the game. I woke up and it was still the same score, and there was one really late goal in literally the last minute or two of the game, and it didn't matter. It was a game that didn't matter, and it was referee dominated in a bad way, and Brazil lost again. Okay, so that's the soccer. I realize that soccer is, an also-ran sport, especially in North America, and so people probably don't care as much as I do about it. Still, it's compelling and interesting. In part, it's like the Olympics. They only come up every 4 years, so there's something of a novelty to it, and it's kind of the opposite of baseball. Baseball's 160 games in a year, and all the teams, so many teams, and it's just, you get so saturated with it. And to me, baseball is one of the worst sports there is. When you actually play it, let's look at baseball. When you're fielding, let's say you're in left field, you're standing there. Nine times you have to go out into the field, nine innings. Each time you have to warm up, throw balls to other players, and get ready. And then you stand there. And they almost hit it to you, and they almost hit it to you, and they almost hit it to you. And let's say on average you get one hit in your direction every two innings. I'm going to bet that's about what it is, 4 or 5 hits per game. That's all you do in the field. 4 or 5 times you're called upon to do something. Now, admittedly, if you're a great player, you can do 4 or 5 great things. And if you're like Manny Ramirez, I think he was a guy that was sort of known for being a bit of a slacker in the outfield. You know, that gives you a couple of chances a game to mess things up. But that's not enough. These games can last, I think they average like 3 or 4 hours. You're playing for 3 or 4 hours and you handled the ball 4 or 5 times? Are you kidding me? Let's say a 3-hour game. Let's say a 200-minute game. You handle the ball, let's say 5 times. That's once every 40 minutes you're touching the ball. I mean, just compared to any other sport. A horrible, horrible ratio. So, luckily, baseball, half the time you're hitting. But still, you only bat once every 9 times. So, that means if it's 3 up, 3 down each inning, if everyone that goes up gets struck out or doesn't make it to first, then you only get 3 people batting per inning. So it's quite possible in the game that you only go up 3 times. Probably the average is 4 times. So just like in the outfield, you get the ball 4 times. When you bat 4 times. Well, it's quite possible for you to go up and never touch the ball. Never even make contact in the entire game. Never get to first, never run the bases, never score a run. So you never scored a run, you touched the ball 4 times in the outfield, and the game lasted 4 hours. Baseball, you know, it's not talked about because baseball is like the grease in the gears. You won't see a fancy commercial on TV for grease. You'll see fancy commercials for engine oil, motor oil. That's the sexy part of lubricating your car. I guess in the baseball analogy, you know, pitching is like the engine oil of baseball. But also baseball itself. You know, if football is like premium engine oil, and the occasional great thing in sports is like some occasional cool car. Well, baseball is just that grease stuck in the axle, the 90-weight grease, thick grease in the rear axle of the car that just preserves the gears so they don't wear out. You don't see it. It's dirty, black, mucky stuff. And without it, you don't have a car running. Without it, you don't have a sports channel. Because for months and months and months of the year, baseball dominates. Not in a good way. They try their hardest. ESPN, it almost makes it worth watching. Keith Olbermann, when he does his nightly sort of sports summary, he makes baseball almost worth watching. Almost. But it's not. You have to go across the entire league and condense it down to 5 or 10 minutes a night to make it tolerable. That's really bad. If you recall, I was talking about in football how the punts in the game are, to me, interesting enough that I wish they would show more highlights of the punts. This is going back a ways, but the point is that they stopped showing the replays and the punts so they could fit in a few more commercial breaks. That sort of, by definition, is the least exciting part of football. And yet I would gladly watch that again and again. And they used to show those again and again highlights every time. So it's a bad sign when your sport is that boring. Baseball is that boring. I'm trying to remember why I started talking about that. Maybe just to try and compare and contrast games. Yeah, saying that soccer is... It provides some spice, some variety. And it's sort of an anomaly. You know, you sort of say to yourself, they're saying this is the world's most popular game. Why isn't it popular in North America? So that sort of naturally brings up some, kicks in some analytical gears, right, when you ask some good questions. Well, anyway, soccer's going to wrap up here today. And I won't have a reason to talk about it for 4 years. One thing I'm kind of bummed about is that this Lionel Messi is obviously super brilliant. And yet, they haven't really given him his fair due on ESPN. They have, I admit, they have occasionally shown a highlight of a soccer game where Messi scores a goal or someone on some soccer team scores a goal, but it's very rare and it's very spotty coverage. It just makes me think that soccer is sort of confined to the soccer channel kind of thing. Well, this Messi is, he's so brilliant. Well, to give you an idea, they're coming out with a documentary on him. Today, I read about it. They're coming out with a documentary on Messi, and I went, typed into the library, I typed in Messi, and there's like 6 different books about this guy. Most of them are considered kids' books, what they call juvenile fiction or whatever. Not fiction, but juvenile, targeting a young audience. Well, anyway, they're coming out with an adult documentary about this guy. I'm really looking forward to it. When it finally comes out on DVD and the English translation, please. He deserves it. Messi deserves it. I'm going to talk more about soccer in the future. Maybe I've been meaning to do an article on soccer and just focus on that for a variety of reasons. And what I've sort of learned and observed this year at the World Cup might sort of finally put me over the edge in terms of having enough to talk about it. Yeah, it's talking about it after the fact. Yeah, it's a sport nobody cares about. This is, I guess they call it a vanity project. This is me doing something about soccer just for me. It's kind of like the end result of everything my dad taught me about soccer and just distilling it into one place, one final take on the game as I walk away from it, because I'm not going to miss it. At the end of the day, I'm not going to miss the World Cup. It's not the beautiful game. It could be. Messi's game is a very beautiful game. Very fantastic, awesome, pick your adjective game. But it's not hard to shut a player down. You know, in hockey, Wayne Gretzky, the greatest player ever in that sport, played for the Edmonton Oilers. And there was a guy who played on his team that most people don't know about. His name was Dave Semenko. And Dave Semenko was not a good hockey player, but he was big. He was what they would call in hockey a goon. He was a bouncer. He was a protector of Wayne Gretzky. And eventually when Dave Semenko retired, he wrote a book. And he took a line from I think it's Bachman Turner Overdrive. The band that did Not Fragile, the album Not Fragile. Anyway, the phrase that he based the title of his book on was looking out for number one. Dave Semenko looked out for number one. He was the guy that if you went after Gretzky, Dave Semenko went after you. It's sad that the sport needed that. Well, it's interesting. Sidney Crosby plays for Pittsburgh Penguins in hockey, and he's, you know, today's Gretzky. Great, great player. Well, when you watch him playing, he is brutalized by the other team. Why? There's no Dave Semenko looking out for him. Well, Lionel Messi needs a Dave Semenko. Or you need suggestions on revamping the game. Because if you want beauty in the game, you have to get rid of the savagery of the game. You know, in football they're doing this. They're changing football before our very eyes. And by the way, football is still beautiful to watch. They just are changing it, though. They found a way to make it less savage, have less beatings, to have less concussions, and still be a great, most popular game. Well, soccer, you're at square one of your revamp. It isn't just the Brazilian national team that needs to completely revamp themselves from square one. Soccer needs it. Get busy, soccer. All right, so I wanted to give an update. When I was talking about the accident name combinations a while back, I gave an example of Tracy Morgan, an actor, who was riding in a limousine and got in a serious car accident. And it was like, what are the odds of that? Limousine's a big vehicle. When something hits a big vehicle, you're more protected than if it hits a small vehicle. How often does a limo get involved in a serious car accident? Clearly the limos never caused the accident because they have professional drivers that are paid to drive reasonably. You know, they ferry people around the downtown, right? Like, hey, let's go to the downtown and whoop it up and open up the sunroof and stand up outside, right? Like, that's the stereotypical use of a limousine, right? Well, it turned out the story was that Tracy Morgan and a bunch of other comics were coming back from a gig, so they were on the highway, and a truck hit them in New Jersey. The truck was a Walmart truck, and the interesting thing here, I got the quote from it. So this Tracy Morgan, anyway, he's filed a lawsuit against Walmart, saying that the truck driver, you know, there were some things that weren't right there. The lawsuit says Walmart is responsible for the collision, as the company should have been aware that the driver's fatigue and the long commute he faced before beginning his shift. This driver apparently had to drive more than 700 miles, that's 11 hours driving, just to reach the depot, the Walmart depot in Delaware, where he was going to start his shift. And they're saying Walmart should have employed him at a closer depot to his home in Georgia than the one in Delaware, so they could have done that. And then they further claim Walmart frequently ignores the regulations set out by the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration regarding shift limits. And that's how many hours you can drive in a given shift in a given day. They have limits on that. I think it's like 10 or 11 hours a day. That's it. Well, this guy was driving 11 hours before his day started. So what's the truck driver's name? Kevin Roper. Kevin, 527, accident looking for a place to happen. What are the odds of that? One accident combination found another accident combination. Well, the odds are higher than you would think because this is the law of attraction. Like attracts like. There were some stories recently of actors, you know, dying. This is like the second actor from the TV show Glee. This was actually the boyfriend of one of the stars of Glee. So the Glee actress's name is Becca Tobin, and then the boyfriend's name is Matt Bendick. The boyfriend was found dead in a Philadelphia hotel. They, you know, haven't come around to saying what caused it all, but they don't suspect her anyway. And I guess he was traveling with her or something like that. One of them was traveling with the other as part of the other's work. I forget which was doing with which. So let's look at Matt Bendick. Matt 189. Now, if you recall, I said about the 189, it's a name that will shorten your life. I remember meeting Tammy shortly after I found out about this principle, this philosophic principle. And Tammy is 189, just like Matt. And I said to them, in the early days, I would analyze people, you know, sort of off the street, kind of spontaneously. Because foolishly, I thought that people cared about their lives and wanted to know how their life works. I was totally wrong about that. So I told this person, I said, "Do you have a name that will shorten your life?" And they looked at me a little bit shocked, and they said, "My palm reading person said that I have a short lifeline." Well, there you go. So this Glee star, Becca Tobin's boyfriend, Matt, he's got a name. His first name is going to shorten his life. What's his last name? Bendick, 549. Well, the 549 is a very intense combination, not at all healthy combination. And when you add them together, you get a 639 total, 9 destiny. The 9 destiny is the destiny of tragedies and losses. Well, this guy lost out totally. And he's obviously a young person. She's a young actress. It's not like her boyfriend is 80 years old. This guy was young when he died. I don't even remember if I got his age, but you could probably look it up. It's probably in his 30s. This is what you predict from the name. When I see a Matt, I think this name will shorten your life. That's what comes to my mind first thing. These numbers don't vary. They don't lie. They don't vary. You ignore them at your peril. He didn't have a chance, right? He didn't have a fair chance. All right, another story. This guy stole a Tesla. A Tesla is an electric car manufacturing company. There are a number of Tesla Roadsters, and Tesla now has, I think, 3 models. These cars are super sporty electric cars. Some of them are very fast. They have a longer than normal range. They cost more than normal, more than the cheap ones do, kind of thing. But they're super well engineered. The founder of the company is fond of saying that no one has died driving a Tesla yet. Well, this guy stole one, high-speed chase, and then he crashed it. In fact, the police gave up on the chase because it was too high speed, so it's too dangerous, and they had already had an accident themselves. So they were walking away from this guy in this chase. Well, he kept driving, you know, recklessly or whatever, and he crashed it at 100 miles an hour, and the Tesla split in half, and the guy died. And so they were discussing on Slashdot, and they were saying that people on Slashdot can be kind of morbid in their jokes. One guy said that, you know, the car split apart, and he came out of the car, and so he died out of the car, so technically he didn't die in a Tesla. This is Slashdot humor. And then another guy said that what happened was he died at the scene. They revived him, and then he died later on from his injuries. So that prompted another Slashdotter to say he died twice. Technically, 2 people have died in a Tesla. As I say, gallows humor. Well, what's the real point here? If no one's ever done something, and a guy has a massive accident and dies doing it, what's his combination? The guy who stole it is Joshua Slot. Joshua, 112. Slot, 663. Add them together, 775. Accident looking for a place to happen. You know, you can say in this case he created the accident, but how many people steal a car and they don't die? That's what's more common. And of course, let's be honest, at times we wish they would die just because they kill other people when they have these high-speed car chases. They're one of the most dangerous things that ever occurs. You know, we've seen the videos where one guy can create multiple accidents and multiple high-speed, either head-on or T-boning type accidents, the kind of accidents that kill innocent bystanders. And the way I am is if someone is, you know, stealing a car and driving at high speed, yeah, I want that guy to die instead of somebody else. No, I don't want him to die. I want the whole thing to not happen in the first place. But once it starts, I want it to end badly for the driver, not for anybody else. Because it can't end well for the driver. Let's take the best case scenario. He's driving along, steals a car, and the police are following him. They throw out the tacks, and they blow out his tires, and then he wears out the rubber, and now he's down to the rims, and the rims turn red hot. I've seen this. And then, you know, he loses control, and he's in a ditch, and they're like, okay, you're under arrest. Well, what happens to the guy? Well, prison for life. You know, minimum of 10 years. Probably the prime 10 years of the guy's life. Oh, he's got a prison record. He has to be in prison for 10 years. That can't be good for your psyche. His life's over. And also, we have to pay for him. We have to keep him locked up for those 10 years, and the cost is like millions of dollars. It's a lot cheaper for that guy to die in that high-speed chase. And again, I'll reiterate, I don't want it to happen in the first place. But once it starts, the cleanest, least consequence to everyone else way for it to end is for the person to have a fatal car accident, that they're the only ones that die. You know, it's a horrific thing. But isn't it interesting in this case, the combination of the guy? I'm just going to try and balance these out with a little bit of positive name combination of the week. Yasiel Puig is a guy that came into the league a couple of years ago with baseball. Again, I don't follow the sport, but this is a name that just stands out. It stands out for me in a couple of ways. One is he was eagerly anticipated, a natural talent. He's sort of one of these players that's instantly great. And then the other thing was Yasiel Puig, I mean, he has two unusual names, so of course I'm analyzing the names anyway. What are his names? Well, Yasiel is 6'2", 8". It's an excellent name, considered a balanced name. Puig, P-U-I-G, 358, excellent name, considered a balanced name. Now, when you add them together, he doesn't have a good destiny. It's very hard to get the left chord, the right chord, and both chords together to all be balanced. In his case, he has a 977 total and 7 destiny, and he is a bit misunderstood already, which is sort of interesting. But anyway, he got voted to the All-Star game. It's only his second year. All-Star game, you know, you got to be one of the top, I mean, let's say 4 or 5 players at your position to get voted there. Little shout out to Yasiel Puig, who's not causing high-speed car accidents. He's not badly officiating games. He's just getting himself voted to the All-Star game with his good name combination. Well, this is the the Super Baby Names Floydcast this week. This is a story I went to Google. When I'm not totally sure what I'm going to talk about, I'm like, hey, go to Google News just before your Floydcast, and maybe there's something that you're missing, some huge story. Well, there was a story on Tinder, TINDER.com, is a, quote, a popular hookup and dating app. And the story headline said that they are being sued for sexual harassment and sex discrimination. Well, what's Tinder? 527, accident looking for a place to happen. So here's this company they haven't really heard of, right? Suddenly being sued for something that's, you know, a more challenging thing to deal with, we'll put it that way. Out of the blue, they've gone from we haven't heard of them to suddenly their front page news kind of thing. Accident looking for a place to happen, that's what happens, right? Well, let's look at the names involved and what's involved here. Well, it turned out that the person alleging that there was this harassment, etc., is a former founder of this company. It's a little more common for the harassment to happen by the lower person, right? The lower level person gets harassed by the upper level person in the company. One of these things where, you know, if you do this, then you'll rise higher in the company. Well, from what I gathered from the story, this company, Tinder, wanted to rise. They wanted to succeed. And what happened was, this person that allegedly got harassed, this lady, was very young. And they thought it looked kind of bad on the books. According to the story, I'm just quoting from what I read. And so they kind of wanted to get rid of her, it seems like. And that's kind of like an unusual twist on the whole harassment thing. Usually, you know, someone aren't they just in it for the pleasure, the supposed pleasure of, hey, you're attractive and I want to spend time with you kind of thing? This was not like that. Anyway, what are the names of the other two co-founders, the other senior executives? Justin Mateen and Sean Rad. Well, let's look at Justin Mateen. Justin, 393. Mateen, M-A-T-E-E-N, 224. Well, first of all, 224, they say about that name combination that it's not at all constructive. All right, so one of her co-founders is not at all constructive. That's a bad thing. Add them together, by the way, Justin and Mateen, 527. Accident looking for a place to happen. Gadzooks, these things are just everywhere. Also today on Google News, big headline, second fatal lightning strike in 2 days at Rocky Mountain National Park. So in 2 days, there's been 2 different big lightning strikes. 10 people have been injured, 2 different people, like 2 people have died on 2 different days. Now I'm reading all that and I'm going, that's unusual. Could it be? So I work out the combination, Rocky Mountain National Park. I worked it out like 3 times to check it. 775, accident looking for a place to happen. You can't make this stuff up. Wow. Okay, that's the last of those for the day. I wanted to give an update or talk about, it's related to my toxic document that I created. It's a massive document. figured if I printed it, it would be 50 pages long. It's an 80-minute video. I have to say it's setting a record for people not wanting to watch the video. I don't blame them. I go for the audio myself. That's my style, and it has been downloaded more as an audio file. Luckily, I should say my audio files are becoming more popular to download. Right now, they're like 5 or 10 times as popular as my videos. And that's kind of how I intended the whole thing. The audio is something that you can put it in your car, first of all. You can't put a YouTube in your car, not safely. The audio is where the real content is. The video, it gets your attention. It's competing with everything else for your attention. But it's the audio that really makes or breaks something. Anyway, in my toxic document, I talk about energy drinks. Turns out that caffeine in our diets is kind of a big factor. Bigger than I think almost all of us think it is. And these energy drinks are a particular problem. The big problem is that they add caffeine to themselves. Some of them don't add any, like Gatorade, Powerade. And then some add caffeine, like Monster Energy drinks and Rockstar, just to name some of the bigger names. And then some have it in a higher proportion than even the Monster or the Red Bull or the Rockstar. And that 5-Hour Energy is one of the most well-known. It's in the little, you know, I think it's a fraction of an ounce, the shot. But the shot is like drinking a cup of coffee. Imagine drinking a cup of coffee in like a tablespoon of liquid. And maybe it's 2 tablespoons, whatever it is. That's kind of shocking in itself. And so what happens is people sometimes, first of all, in a bar, which isn't a good place to be mixing alcohol and caffeine, but people do. You know, it's become popular with Red Bull. I think it started where, you know, you'd have a Red Bull and, you know, your alcohol drink. On one level, it makes sense because alcohol is a downer, slows your reaction times. Caffeine's an upper, so you keep your reaction time in theory, or you don't fall asleep. Well, unfortunately, both are toxic. Both are poisons, and when you take both at once, good things are not going to happen. You can't cheat a toxin. So when you start using these, it's one thing to mix a Red Bull and an alcohol, and the Red Bull is 8 ounces, 8.5. And then, say you're drinking a beer, you're drinking 20 ounces of liquid to get 1 ounce of alcohol and like 100 milligrams of caffeine, which is like half a cup of coffee of caffeine. So it's just not that much of either. It takes time to drink 20 ounces, right? Well, when you take an energy shot, let's say you're drinking vodka and you throw in an energy shot into your vodka, now in 2 ounces, roughly, you've drank your shot of alcohol and your shot of coffee, your shot of caffeine. So you can knock back more of those. And of course, you just have to imagine young people where drinking games and competing with each other, how much can they drink? Well, they're doing the energy shots too, right? That becomes a competition too. I'm sure there are people that have taken, you know, you can buy the energy shots in a box, like a dozen or whatever it is. Well, imagine pouring a dozen of those. That's 1,200 milligrams of caffeine. That's equal to 6 strong cups of coffee. I think that's already your daily limit, just to give you an idea. Well, all that liquid together, it's probably like 8 or 10 ounces. It's like a tall glass of water. And now you're overdosing on caffeine. Well, some kids, you know, if you have a bad heart, caffeine can stop your heart. Well, there was a commercial on TV. This is really kind of depressing. Yummification. Someone's made up a new word in marketing. People, they dreamt up a new word. Yummification. You can look it up on Google. The website is 5-Hour Yummification. Y-U-M-M-ification. And they have a contest. They say the first step in the contest is to watch our video. Second step is to mix 5-Hour Energy in your favorite beverage. Step 3, give your yummification creation a name. Step 4, make a 1-minute video of why your drink is so great. Step 5, upload your video. And then if you do all this, you could share in the $100,000 prize pool. So there's a total of $100,000 available. I think the top prize was $10,000 or something. So there's nothing available. When you work it out, divide $100,000 by a national marketing campaign that's $10 million, let's say. This is a rounding error, as they say. This is 1% of the total in marketing investment is in actual prizes. But what are they encouraging? Step 2, mix 5-Hour Energy in your favorite beverage. So take your favorite beverage and add 100 milligrams of caffeine to it. People don't stop at one. They don't stop at one beverage. There's something about coffee that you tend to stop drinking it after a while. You sort of get the message. But when you take concentrated forms of things, you don't get the message as clearly. You know, there's often a progression in bad things where you start off with beer and then you move to wine and then you move to hard stuff, right? Well, it's kind of like that. You start off with Gatorade, then you move to Monster Energy Drink, and then you move to these energy shots, which are even more concentrated. I was pretty bummed and pretty discouraged by this ad, but it just shows that my toxic document is right on track, because I'm at least warning people about this. I'm creating these sort of update files for my talks, because after I do them, I realize, wow, there's even more you can say about the subject, or things are even worse than I was saying they are, and here's an example. When you do a warning on something, it often leads to a second warning, because people don't heed the first one. Anyway, a little depressing, but it shows you how much 5-Hour Energy cares about you. I would say they don't care about you at all. This is a pure moneymaker. This is a little marketing game. Yummification. What does a kid think when they see that word? Do they think, yummification, that means I should be careful how much I drink? No, they don't think that. All right, I'm going to move to my of the weeks. Bad driver of the week. Don't have a particular story, so I'm going to go for one of the articles that I've run across. This one, the headline says, "Safety feature for pedestrians has undesired consequence." This is a story on NPR.org, July 1st. New analysis finds that the countdown clocks telling pedestrians how much time they have to cross the intersection actually increase traffic crashes. It used to be, walk, don't walk. That wasn't quite enough information, so then they had the don't walk flashing. It would flash for a while, and then it would go solid. And it would go solid when the light turned yellow. In other words, when it's flashing, it's like you better hurry. And then when it turns solid, it's turning solid because you're now crossing a street where it's green the other way. That isn't great. That was kind of a waste of the going solid, because you already have that information when the light is turning green for the traffic. So then they have a thing where they chirp. You push the button to cross, and it chirps, first of all, to tell the blind person, or to give feedback to an older person, maybe, that, okay, we've received your push. We're not ignoring you. And of course, people then, kids especially, they'll push it 20 times, waiting for the light to turn. So I don't know if they need that chirp when you push it. Why doesn't the system chirp once? I guess the theory is, let's say person A pushes it, and then 5 seconds elapse, and person B comes along, and they want to cross, and they don't know if person A has pushed it, so then they push it. Well, then it has to chirp again. So, it's one of these things, right? People abuse something, and so then they have to make it a certain way, and then that annoys many of the people much of the time. People, it's last time we were talking about this, and they were saying that, what's the big deal with the chirping? And they were like, well, people who live nearby can hear it, and they were like, no way they can hear it. And guys just saying, like, hey, yeah, I live near one of these crosswalks, and I can definitely hear it. Of course you can. People don't realize how loud stuff is. It's one of those things, we humans in 2014, we have a blind spot when it comes to audio. Perfect example is you go to a movie. It's deafeningly loud. I went to the movie, what's the movie? The dreaded DiCaprio movie. I think I've thoroughly expunged it from my mind. It's the one a year or two back. I think it even won. It was Oscar nominated. Whatever. Very, very noisy movie. Left the theater, couldn't watch it. Because in a theater, unlike at home, you can't control the volume. I had earplugs, but of course, what do? They have the stupid explosions really loud, and then the part that matters, the dialogue, really quiet. Great. Another example of noise is you go to a sporting event. In football, you had stadiums this last year or two. They were competing with each other. Who had the loudest fans? Well, at their peak, the cheering in the loudest stadiums is at the volume of a jet engine at takeoff. The worst noise that they normally use in their examples is a jet engine at 120 decibels and a rock concert at 130. Well, these stadiums, the crowd gets, because it's an additive effect, the volume levels get up to 120 decibels, up to the jet engine level. Well, you can have hearing damage and loss starting at 85 decibels. And for every 10 decibels you go up, it's 10 times, doubles every 10? I think it's 10 times louder every 10 decibels. Let me look that up. Yeah, the sound system is kind of confusing. You know, decibel is very clean and neat. Ambient background sound in a room might be 60, 70, and have a little light party, a little get-together with four people at a table, and you might have decibels in the 80 range. And kids' classroom, when the teacher leaves the room, might be 90, and busy street might be 100, and, you know, so it goes, right? It's a nice, simple system. But it's a 10-log-10 system. So the bottom line is, if something is 10 times louder in terms of power, which is what's hitting your ear, right, is the power, then it's 10 times the log of 10 of that. Well, the log of 10 is 1, and 10 times 1 is 10. So it's 10 times louder, but it translates to 10 decibels louder. Well, what I'm getting is, you increase a number from 80 to 90, it sounds like a small increase. You might say it's gone from 80 to 800. That's what's actually happened from an energy point of view. So damage can happen at 85. These sports stadiums get into the 120 range. So 85 to 95 is 10, to 105 is 10, to 115 is 10, and each of those are a factor of 10. So was that 95, 105, 115? That's three factors of 10. That's a factor of 1,000. Roughly, it's 3,000 times louder than the level that will start to damage your hearing. The one other factor that people don't know about with loud noises, they think it's just loud, right? If something's really loud, you should plug your ears type thing. Well, it's the cumulative, the area under the curve. In other words, you can have a loud noise that's brief, and that's relatively harmless. You can have a doesn't seem to be all that loud noise that's all day, you will lose your hearing. Because it's the total impact. Think of it like you're filling a bucket with water. You can have a jet, say a pressure washer, and you spray it for 1 second into your bucket, and you might only spray in a quart. Or you can put your bucket under a downspout of a house and you get 20 gallons. Well, the 20 gallons in the hearing analogy is going to do more harm to your ear than the 2 quarts. So at the sporting event, the game lasts for hours. And the cheering, I mean, there are some sports and some events that are such a big deal. I mean, for example, the commentator at one of the soccer games, don't remember which one, they were saying people weren't sitting down. They had some quaint way of saying it, but people were standing up in droves. Well, when you're standing up in droves, you're not quiet. You're excited, you're screaming, you're yelling, you're woofing it up. Apparently at this soccer, the amount of whistling is very high. I think that whistling is one of the loudest things a human can do, is to whistle. It's quite a bit worse than shouting. First of all, you can't sustain shouting. It's hard to sustain a loud noise, but you can sustain a whistle because you are pursing your lips. You're making a small hole in your lips, and only a small amount of air is coming out. But it's coming out in a shrill, high-pitched fashion. High-pitched sounds are more damaging to your ears than low-pitched sounds. When you add it all up, those sporting events, those season's tickets, that's a ticket to hearing loss. That's what that is. And isn't it nice that they take kids to those games? And they don't give them special earplugs that rock stars use. Rock stars use custom-made earplugs. They basically give the maximum protection against loud sound that you can get. They have a little channel which equalizes the pressure and allows a little bit of sound to get through. But they literally have protection that's 100 times better than the people out in the audience who have no protection. So it's 1,000 times too loud. They have protection that's at the 100 level. 1,000 divided by 100, that leaves 10. So yeah, it's still 10 times too loud for them, but they only perform for 2 hours and they go home. That sporting event could be 2 hours. The average person, what they're subjecting themselves to at a sporting event, they just don't know about it. It's a blind spot. So that's the chirping of these crosswalks. So the next level is they put these countdown timers on these crosswalks. So they're showing a number. Now we've seen them. Instead of just showing a walk signal, it shows a number. The number counts down, and it's telling you how long you have to get through that intersection before it turns yellow. So instead of just a flashing walk signal, it would be like walk, and then when it was at the point where you didn't necessarily have enough time to start walking across, it would start to flash to say, you should be in the process of getting across now. Don't start. And then it would turn red when it's like, you can't cross because it's green the other way. It's not a very clear system. And, you know, with cars, a car can clear an intersection in 1 or 2 seconds. So the red, yellow, green is adequate for cars. But for people crossing, you need something more. You do need a timer. You need something that tells you whether you have time to cross or not. So I think the timers, the pedestrian timers, are excellent. And when I'm driving, I use them, absolutely. They're very effective, and I know exactly whether I can get through the intersection or not. But what happens is some people, they speed up. The light's about to turn, so they speed up going into the intersection, and then, of course, there's always the chance that someone wants to turn left coming towards you, right? They're waiting until the light turns yellow before they turn left, right, and clear the intersection. Well, now you have a conflict. So, in the bad driver of the week category are the people that, let's say, recklessly speed up when they think the light is going to change. For me, I do an estimate. I go, this is my current speed, and at this current speed, I'm going to get to the intersection in, you know, 2 or 3 seconds. You just get a feel for these things after a while. And then, you know, the counter says 6. I'm going to get there in 3. I've got 3 seconds to spare. But let's say I'm 2 seconds away and the counter says 2. I go, okay, it's probably going to turn yellow right when I hit the intersection. That's okay. I'm fine with that. But let's say I'm 2 seconds away and it counters at 1. I start slowing down now. I don't have a chance of getting through that intersection safely. And I use the timer to slow down in advance. And I'm grateful for it because I don't waste gas. Bombing along, thinking, I'm going to make it. Bang, it turned red in my face. Counters stop the light from turning red in your face. They warn you. You know, in the right hands, it's a great feature. In the wrong hands, it causes more accidents, as the story says. All right, my rewatch of the week. I rewatched the documentary, This Film Is Not Yet Rated. That's what it's called. 2005 documentary, 9 years ago, done by Kirby Dick. K-I-R-B-Y and then Dick. This guy, Kirby Dick, has done some good documentaries. He does some important ones. And I encourage you to... I would go to Wikipedia and check out what he's done, because they have a nice list of everything. By the way, his name, Kirby Dick, Kirby, K-A-R-B-Y, 922. Nothing special there. Kind of lacks backbone. Dick, D-I-C-K, 999, for a 922 total. This is not a strong name. This is not a name where you expect someone to do something significant. At least I don't. But he's actually born Kirby Brian Dick, and Brian, B-R-Y-A-N. 922, 156, 999 for a 178 total, 8 destiny. Well, that's more like it. He shows the 8 destiny. It's a constructive destiny, successful destiny. With the 1 there, 178, the 1 is kind of like, it can be a little hard, but it's very focused. And it's a bit like the pit bull that gets a thought in its head and it follows it through to a conclusion. Well, this guy, his documentaries, they follow it through to a conclusion, that's for sure. Got some quotes here from the movie. After watching what happened for 20 years with the ratings board and all the criticism from critics, filmmakers, even people around the country, and nothing changing at all, I felt it was really time to set out to make a film. One of the things he didn't like was, I think this is from IMDb, his comments about for each person, each actor on IMDb, they have a bio page, and then as part of the bio page, they have quotes from the person. Here's another quote. Violent films get through almost unscathed. They get through the critic stage, the ratings stage. But the ratings have this excessive focus against sexuality that puts independent film at a disadvantage. Well, this is true. I think sort of a perpetual example for me is the movie Sin City. Sin City is in the graphic novel category. I think you can safely say that the graphic novel category is the new horror film category. I would encourage you to avoid all graphic novels. They are that bad. And they get a free pass from the ratings board. How about this, though? They get a free pass from Comcast. When Sin City's on TV, and if you have a Comcast set up, hit your guide button while you're highlighting Sin City in the guide and have a look at the rating for Sin City. They rate Sin City at 4 stars. 4 stars. That's like, it doesn't get any better than this movie. I'd actually encourage you to, again with Comcast, it's probably true on the other channels, one extent or another, look at their ratings. I think the Comcast ratings are almost a perfect inverse of how the ratings should be. They routinely rate horrendous movies as 4-star. For example, E.T., the movie E.T., and then they take really great films and they give them like 2 stars. What's going on there? That's a long subject. Here's a comment someone left on IMDb about the movie. This film is not yet rated. So this is just an average Joe Blow leaving a comment. Quote, violence is another concept that somehow doesn't register with the MPAA, Motion Picture Association of America, I think is what it stands for. And this guy, I just realized this, he's talking about Sin City. Robert Rodriguez's Sin City was a grim, bloody, violent, and brutal film, but manages to sneak by with an R rating somehow. Compare that to the movie The Cooler, another fantastic film, which was threatened with an NC-17 rating for showing a 3-second glimpse of Maria Bello's lady area, as Jeremy Clarkson from Top Gear would say. And then this comic concludes with, it's preposterous. Well, it's all part of the money train. Follow the money. Sex sells. And in the case of movies, it's the lack of sex that sells. In Europe, they don't even rate the sex in movies. In at least one country, a Scandinavian country, I forget which one. But I was kind of blown away by that. They don't even rate it. Because over there, they're just saying it's a part of life. And they come down hard on the violence. And some people have sort of argued that that's what we should be doing with our ratings. We should be come down harder on the violence and less hard on the sex. Well, I think that both should be rated. I don't really have a problem with the ratings from a sexual point of view of movies. I think there's nothing wrong with a tiered system. There's nothing wrong with that at all. The problem that the movie, this film is not yet rated, brings up is that when a movie gets an NC-17 rating, it's essentially a box office killer. You can't advertise it during regular hours. The movie chains don't want to carry the movie, so it's only available in select theaters type thing. It basically kills the movie. Kind of like the red card in soccer. Movies, you know, it's kind of like soccer. They don't have enough tiers, so they don't have enough steps in the ladder. It's a no-consequence whistle penalty kick. It's a yellow card. That's a hefty consequence. A couple rungs missing there. And then it's a massive consequence to a red card, which in soccer is your team is short for the rest of the game, whereas in other sports your team is not short when you get kicked out. Well, with movies, when you get an NC-17, your movie is kicked out. Anyway, a great documentary. Gives you a lot to think about. The money, the corruption behind movies is a huge subject, and you really should know the territory on that one. It's all about they want to maintain control of the message. They don't care about any individual movie. It's the message. That's why the MPAA is also big in the anti-piracy game. These movie studios are infinitely rich, and they make infinite amounts of money on their movies. They're not worried about losing money to pirates. It's already been shown that the same people who tend to heavily pirate movies are the same people who buy movies. They like movies. They want to get movies by every way they can. It's actually been shown that when people illegally share stuff online, it actually helps the movie or the music or whatever. But when someone shares something, they have a potential to control the message. They can edit it. They really don't want that. They can cut out all the commercials. You can have a great movie and they can have horrible trailers in it. Trailers are, of course, spoilers. Well, when you cut out the spoilers and when you go straight to the movie, they don't like that. So that's one of the things that when you have it available online is you cut out the cruft, as they call it, the garbage. Why is the advertising a big deal? Well, they want movies to have a shelf life. Just like Microsoft wants Windows to have a shelf life. Microsoft's figured it out now. Windows 8 is the perfect example of shelf life. Windows 8 is a product that has good, if not great, features, and then some really horrible things. On purpose. Which, oh, the next version won't have those horrible things, so you can upgrade. But the next version will have some really horrible things. And then you'll realize it, and then you'll be like, oh, I can't wait till I upgrade to the one afterwards. They call it the upgrade treadmill. Well, they want that with movies even more so. If you came out with a great movie, people would watch it 10 times, 20 times, and they do, right? Well, they sure don't want that. Because if you watch one movie 20 times, it doesn't matter in what format other than going to the theater. If you go to the theater, you're paying full buck, right? But if you rent it and you watch it a bunch of times, you're probably watching it more than once on the same rental. If you get it from the library, no matter how many times you watch it, it's free. If you buy it and then you watch it 20 times and you buy it for 10 bucks, that's only 50 cents a view. They don't want that. They want you to keep going to the next movie and the next and the next. And so they have a clever system. They advertise the most the movies that are the worst. They advertise the least the movies that are the best. Because the good ones will advertise themselves. Word of mouth and just who's in the movie, what's the story about, we can figure these things out for ourselves. So with the bad movies, they have to lie at every step of the way. They have to lie in the ratings and say, yeah, a movie like Sin City is fine. It's no problem. 4 stars. It's kind of a horrific thing, and This Film Is Not Yet Rated is a great documentary. I really encourage it. So that was my rewatch. I thoroughly enjoyed watching that the other day. My cool thing of the week. This happened a couple weeks back, but still I've been meaning to talk about it. I helped my wife clean out the basement. I was a little bit laid up with an injury, and so she was doing the heavy lifting downstairs, and then I was just sort of packing stuff out. Things I could carry with one hand kind of thing. I was to pack meal and carrying stuff up and out and then putting it on the curb. And we happen to live on a corner lot and 2 kind of busy roads, just the right amount of busyness. If it was like super mainstream roads, well, no one would be stopping to check out our junk. If it's too quiet, you don't get enough cars. Well, we got just the right amount of cars. And so stuff goes from our curb really readily. Well, we put out, I figured, a drop box full of stuff. The way I am is I sort of, as you buy and you get stuff, I store the pack of material, or you may stop using something. Well, I just store it. I mean, we all do this, right? And we accumulate junk. And then periodically, the great thing is to get rid of that junk. Now, for many people, they have a garage sale. I think there's a lot of downsides of a garage sale. Let's look at them. One of the drawbacks of a garage sale is you have to man the booth, right? You have to be there all day, usually in the heat, it seems to be. Because if it isn't the heated, it's because it isn't sunny. If it isn't sunny, it might rain. If it rains, that's a disaster, right? So you're out there in the hot sun, let's say for typically 2 or 3 days, people schedule it for 2 or 3 days, at least, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or let's say Saturday, Sunday. So you're committed to 16 hours. Well, even at 10 bucks an hour, you got to make 160 bucks just to pay for your own labor. You have people spelling you off, right? You don't just do it all yourself. So double it. You need to make 300 bucks just to break even, right? I've never been good at selling stuff. I don't mean in the salesman point of view. I mean selling junk. I'm not good at selling junk. I think it takes a special mentality to sell junk. And I don't think it's a good mentality. Sorry, I don't think it is. You have to kind of over-represent stuff. Because for one thing, in a garage sale, it's all bargaining, right? No matter what price you put on there, many people don't want to pay that price. It doesn't matter what the price is. The item could cost $100 new. You're putting it out for $5, and they're like, I'll give you $1 for it. I don't want to deal with the guy that offers you $1 for the $100 item. I don't want to deal with that guy. So we put all this junk out, and I would make all these trips. And it's just routine. I would put it out, I'd go back to get more, and I'd come back, and some of the stuff I'd put out was already gone. In fact, the area that I was using to display the junk on was about 3 squares of a sidewalk, like a couple of large tables. If you're at a swap meet, imagine a couple of swap meet tables. That was the total area that I was using. Well, we kept bringing stuff out, but we only needed that same amount of space ever, because stuff went away. But I wanted to comment on some of the people and some of the things that happened, and, you know, something for you to think about. And this is why it makes it a cool thing of the week. A lot of the people that were taking stuff, they're very deserving types. There was a guy who needed a coffee pot, and I happened to be there when he was considering it. He's like, oh, there's a coffee pot there. And I was like, yeah, it still works. We switched from an electric coffee pot to a French press. Now, here's the thing. A coffee pot is not expensive. These days, right, 10, 20 bucks, brand new. Well, if a guy's getting excited about a used coffee pot, how much money does he have? He doesn't have much. So he's going to appreciate it more. That feels good. I got a chance to tell him that it worked, so now he feels even better. Plus, by me talking to him, I got a chance to see, hey, this guy's very deserving. My coffee pot went to a home rather than just being cleared off of our sidewalk. There was a guy with work gloves. This was sort of the highlight of the day for me. This guy had work gloves on. He's, you know, clearly like a person who goes around picking up scrap type guy. These guys work very hard. They always have beat up old trucks. Very hard to make a living doing this. you're trying to get scrap metal, little bits and pieces here and there that might have a tiny value to them. They're dirty. You got to do it all day. You got to just wander over vast areas, and you got a truck, so you're not getting good gas mileage. While he was looking at the stereo, I had changed the stereo in my truck so that I could have one that played MP3s. My truck is 12 years old, and at the time when I changed it, it didn't even have an auxiliary jack. So you couldn't even have like an MP3 player and pipe the output into the stereo. I had no choice. I had to get rid of the stereo to get an MP3 capable stereo. Well, my truck had a good stereo in it, and like a cassette stereo or something. No, it was a CD. And so I just took it out and I kept it for years, and then I was like, what am I keeping this for? Well, this guy, he lit up when he saw the stereo, and then I told him that it works, and that I had just taken it out because I wanted to upgrade my stereo. And he started talking about his truck and how he had upgraded some part of it, which I immediately forgot what it was, and how happy he was. And I looked at his truck, it's just a very average truck. I've seen worse ones, and I've sure as heck seen better ones. Well, it made his day to get this used stereo. Trash and treasure, right? My trash was his treasure. Again, I got to see where it went rather than it just being taken away. Books went, some of them went quickly, some of them were good ones, you know. Lots of kids' sandbox toys. These were toys that we've had for like 10 years or more. They didn't know anybody anything. Worn out, you might say. Family members thought I was crazy for putting them out. They're like, no one's going to take those. And I was like, they're going to be gone the next day. They were. Bookshelves and garden hoses. Put out a wire basket and had a hummingbird nest in it. And it would have been easy to throw the hummingbird nest in our recycling. It doesn't cost you anything to put stuff in the recycling. But I thought, someone will appreciate that hummingbird nest. It had a couple of eggs in it. Sure enough, away it went. Quick. We had bought some sport-themed beanbag chairs. They weren't really beanbags. If they had been beanbags, I would have kept them, or they would have been more useful. They sold them with styrofoam packing material, and this turned out to be a very clever scam. The chairs, you know, $20 or whatever, which, you know, it's not cheap, but it's reasonable. The pack material was like $20 a chair. Well, you put these, they're sort of shaped like the peanuts, the styrofoam peanuts, but these things broke down super readily, and we bought more, and we bought more, and we bought more of these things. And eventually, I took all of them and put them in one of the chairs because three became one pretty quickly. The stuff just crushed to nothingness. Oh, dear. And I've now furthered the scam by giving the chairs away to others. Maybe they'll think to put something in there that doesn't compact quite as readily, which would be something natural, right? Buckwheat husks make a great pillow material. They're surprisingly soft, even though each husk is individually is very sharp. And they just last forever. They don't change shape. We put out paintings, we put out lithographs. The funny thing was what they didn't take. We put out a TV, working TV, put it on a sticker on saying it was working. Nobody took it. Now part of it is it was an old cathode ray tube TV, a big heavy glass tube. Thing is, it's got 10 pounds of lead in there. It's worth $10 or $20 just for the lead. But it's now basically, it's considered sort of like a toxic product. No one wants it in their actual house, and so no one took it. That surprised me. Anyway, just a fun thing to get rid of stuff. It's so therapeutic. It feels so good. It frees up space in your own home, as opposed to keeping it for that yard sale that you never have or that you have once a year. And it brought to mind thoughts of my moving document where I say you should first get rid of stuff before you move. Get rid of as much as you can, because why move stuff that you don't really need? In this case, we saved a Dropbox full of stuff. It's probably a slight exaggeration, maybe a half a Dropbox. But it was a Dropbox worth of mental burden that we got rid of. You know, sometimes just throwing something out can be really cool. Again, it's one of those things that we're not really taught. We don't think of it that way. We think buying something is really cool. I remember reading somewhere that someone suggested that every time you buy something, you should commit to yourself that you're going to get rid of something. And if you think about it, if your place is stuffed to the gills already and you buy something, you have to get rid of something. On average, we don't enjoy or appreciate or respect the need for getting rid of stuff, cleaning stuff out. It's underrated. So that was my underrated cool thing of the week. Alright, I'm going to finish with a quote. My quote for the week is from a guy called Matthew Berry. He writes for ESPN, and he's the fantasy football guy. Now, fantasy football is one of these things that you're either into it or you're not. If you're into it, I don't need to tell you anything, and if you're not, it's like, why are we talking about it? Well, let's have a look at this quote. There's very little in this world that I'm good at, but one thing at which I am truly fantastic, manipulating statistics to tell the story I want to tell. This is just a one quote from a larger story, which I'll have it available at some point here, and it's a good story. You can check it out online. He used an example, and he said, which of these players would you draft? And he rattled off like 10 statistics about this guy, and then he rattled off 10 statistics about this guy. And, you know, which one would you choose? I published it in my Amazing. It's one of these things where when you scroll down, I put in those little dots, and you scroll down, and you find out it's the same guy. So he was demonstrating that using statistics, you can make anyone look great or lousy just with statistics. And that was some, you know, refreshing honesty from a sports commentator. And a good point. There are lies, darn lies, and statistics kind of thing. You can make statistics go either way. That's why with my toxic document, I tried to get a common denominator, a common way of looking at all these different toxins so that you have a reference point. One of the things you'll see in graphs sometimes is you'll see a graph, and without our product, you're here, and with our product, you're much higher over here. But when you look at the scale, if they show you the scale, you realize that it's a discontinuous scale. In other words, they're not showing you the whole scale on the graph. For that big change that they're showing you, the graph would have to be 10 feet tall, but they're making it seem like the graph is 1 foot tall. So they make the gain seem like it's 10 times bigger than it is. This happens a lot with statistics. Just nice to see someone refreshingly commenting on it, using a kind of a fun example. So today, it's Argentina versus Germany in the final game of the 2014 FIFA World Cup of Soccer. The beautiful game. Well, we'll see. One way or the other. So this has been Floyd Maxwell, justthinkit.com, doing a Floydcast number 22 for July the 14th, 2014. Good luck with your life. Take care.